a nice day for a white wedding.
Here's Johnny!
You, me, the 80s and the 90s.
Songs are memories, music is therapy. Hello and welcome to You, Me, the 80s and the 90s. As always, I'm Wayne Tunks.
And I'm Emma Louise.
Here we are at episode 70, so it is a special one.
Yay!
So we, for episode 60, looked at the top music videos of the 80s. The other half of us is the 90s, so...
It is only fair.
Should we do the 90s?
Let's, please.
And I think it's really interesting. Music videos really changed from 80s to 90s.
Yeah. In what way do you mean?
I think they became more stylized. The 90s was very a stylish sort of decade.
Yeah.
Which I know people now kind of bag out the 90s, but I do think it was really stylish.
Yeah.
And 80s, I think they threw everything at the wall and there was like these big lavish stories and whatever. And in the 90s, I feel like it was all about the style.
Yeah, okay.
And a lot of the ones that we're talking about today are very stylish.
Absolutely.
Because they're clearly the ones that broke through in the 90s.
Yeah. I'm excited about this list today.
And then I say that, and then the ones that you and I picked for our classics.
Maybe not so stylish.
Yeah.
Mine they, definitely not.
They both look very, very cheap, but beautifully cheap.
Yeah. I think mine was shot for like $800.
Yeah. All right. So we've teased enough. What is your classic pick?
Okay. I decided to go with Praise You by Fatboy Slim. Praise You is a song by British DJ Fatboy Slim, released as the third single from his second studio album, You've Come a Long Way, Baby, back in January 1999. Great album. It reached number one in the UK and in Iceland, number two in Belgium, number four in Canada, six in Ireland, hit the top 40 in a bunch of other countries, including the US, where it got to 36, and here in Australia, where it only got to 28, which kind of surprises me because I remember it, I don't know, being bigger than that here. It was in New Zealand even. It got to number 11, I think, over there. But maybe I just thought it was bigger because I bought this album and I loved this album. And did you own this album?
I did not. I'm not that big of a fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This album in particular, I loved it. I loved it. And I love this song. And, yes, we're here to talk about the videos, right?
We are.
This video makes me giggle. It's shot, you know, guerrilla style where they just went into where was it? It was outside a theatre, I think, in California somewhere. And they were a fictitious dance troupe, the Torrance Community Dance Group, they called themselves, and they just had their little boombox there. They played the song and the dancing's just, I mean, it's woeful but incredible.
That's part of the appeal, that the dancing Absolutely. Is so bad.
And it's meant to be, and you're meant to laugh. I mean, the main guy, because he directed it actually.
Spike Jonze, yeah.
Yeah, Spike Jonze with Roman Coppola, who is Francis Ford Coppola's son, I believe.
I don't know. There's a lot of the Coppolas. So.
No, I think it is. Anyway, he was actually in the clip himself and was the lead character, but he went under the pseudonym Richard Kofi or Kalfi or something. That was his character name. And, yeah, his dancing was abysmal, but he's so hilarious.
And I find that he's had a very interesting career.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he has directed some very indie darling films. He directed Being John Malkovich.
Did Did he?
Yes. Oh. Which is a film that I hate.
Yeah, I couldn't get into that. I really tried, but I don't think I was intelligent enough to get it.
It was at that point where I was really into cinema. I was going to cinema a lot, and I remember me and my ex, who was a bit of an arty wanker.
Yeah.
Lovely guy, arty wanker. We went and saw it, and he loved it, and I hated it. And I remember saying to him, did you really love it, or did you love it because people say you should love it?
Yeah.
And there's people probably going to hate on us for saying that, but that's okay. I did not enjoy the film. I remember hate watching it, like just like sitting there in the cinema going, "This is, I don't want to be here."
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, he's made some other really, you know, interesting films. He made Her, which is a film that was very, a lot of people didn't like that film. A lot of people loved it.
Who was in that?
Was that the one with Jennifer Lawrence? Or am I thinking of a different film? Or is that she? I don't know. Oh. I get the two confused. Oh, I don't,
doesn't matter.
I probably should have looked. He did Adaption as well, which is a film, again, that was very critically acclaimed, but people either loved it or hated it. But then he also wrote and produced all of the Jackass films.
Wow.
And I just said Jackass in a very posh voice. Darling, should we watch Jackass tonight?
Yes, please. Let's have a bit of Jackass. Oh, that sounds weird.
Okay, well, hey, well.
That's fascinating. Yes. Actually, I didn't know any of that about him. How different can you get?
I know. And his filmography isn't that big for making, like, his debut directorial, like, his directorial debut was being John Malkovich. You would have thought, and Adaption was a massive film as well. You would have thought he would have made more. He made Where the Wild Things Are in 2009 as well.
Oh, was that the one set in New Zealand?
I didn't say it.
Oh, okay. No, maybe.
Oh, no, Where the Wild Things Are. That's the book.
The story. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I would have thought he would have done more, but no, the last film he directed was in 2013. Since then he's produced and wrote a lot of Jackass films.
Well, there's a lot of money in that too. And he must enjoy that. That side of the being silly. You can see in this video that he does enjoy that silly stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously, Fatboy Slim does as well, because he actually, this video got made because Jones was unable to work with Fatboy Slim for the video for Rockefeller Skank. And so he
said, I prefer that as a song.
Yeah, that's another good song, but I like both. Anyway, so because he couldn't do that video, he sent Fatboy Slim, because they're mates or whatever, a video of him dancing to that song. And Fatboy Slim loved it. He laughed his butt off and said, no, you need to do Praise You. And so that's how this got made.
And if you look at future Fatboy Slim clips as well, the one that your dad loves, remember he made us watch that day? Well, like, we've seen it, Bobby.
Which one was it?
The one with Christopher Walken.
Oh, yes.
Weapon of Choice.
Yes. That was it. I wonder if Spike did that as well.
I don't know.
Maybe not. Anyway. It won awards back at the 1999 MTV Music Awards, Breakthrough Video, Best Direction, which was awarded to the Torrance Community Dance Group, very cute, and Best Choreography.
which is quite funny, really, because imagine that you've got this big, you know, proper choreographer and that wins for choreography.
Yeah. God, it just makes me laugh. It was also nominated for but didn't win Best Dance Video. But they did put on a dance performance to the song at those awards. And, yeah.
There you go.
In 2001, it was also voted number one of the 100 best videos of all time in a poll, MTV poll. Things have changed since then, I'm sure. But, yeah, back in 2001, we loved it. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. So if you haven't seen it, do have a look. It's fun for a laugh. Fatboy Slim himself appears in a couple of the scenes. If you blink, you'll miss him, but he's there. And, everything that happens in it, like some guy from the theatre actually comes in and turns off the music. Not planned. Yeah. That was just some guy that was a bit disgruntled that didn't want them doing what they were doing.
Probably lucky they didn't get the police called on them.
Probably. But, yeah, watch it, have a laugh.
And anybody who's ever done any filmmaking, and guerrilla-style filmmaking, is exhilarating and also frightening.
Scary.
At the same point.
Yeah.
Well, you were there recently when we shot in a cemetery.
That's right. Well, but that was in the dark of night.
Permission. Like, we had permission to shoot in that cemetery.
Yeah, actually, we were lucky that no neighbours.
I don't know. Shooting in a cemetery at night, I know everyone was worried about the scary element. I, as the producer, was more worried about the getting caught.
Yeah.
I was not worried about ghosts or goblins or ghouls or zombies. I was worried about police.
Yeah.
And council rangers. But anyway.
Anywho, take us to yours, Wayne.
All right. So I have picked a fantastic song and clip. It's Shakespeare's Sister, Stay. The first time I heard Shakespeare's Sister Stay was on the radio on a Sunday evening when I would listen to the UK Top 10. On the radio, it was my favourite time of the week. I heard it and loved it instantly. When I finally saw the video a few weeks later, I loved it even more. It was perfection. So here's Marcella grieving over the body of her lover, singing a sweet song about staying when the totally crazy and totally brilliant Siobhan Faye starts and sees her as the angel of death and they fight over the body. It was crazy and I loved every second. The song reached 3 in Australia, 4 in the US and 1 in Ireland, Sweden and the UK.
Yeah, we've discussed the song before.
Yeah.
And I was never big into it. I know you are.
I just recently got the re-release, the vinyl.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I just got it. And I got like an autographed copy of a card as well. And yeah, big fan.
Nice. Nice. The video is kind of fun though.
Only kind of.
Her in her cat suit as
the angel of death.
And then, yeah, having that fight, literally a fight between life and death.
Yeah.
Like it's very symbolic.
And it looks so cheap. But that works so well.
It really does. And I think that's a problem I have with it. Do you reckon it works well?
Oh, I think it works fantastic because it's inspired by a film.
That's right. It is too.
Catwomen of the Moon, which, you know, wasn't a high budget film.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were using that as the inspiration and I just think it worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, people obviously like it because apparently as of February last year, 2021, the official video has had over 20 million views on YouTube and it's only been there for 3 years.
Yeah. And so it won Best Video at the 1993 Music Week Awards and Best Video at the Brit Awards.
Yeah, right.
So
that's no small thing.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a really good period of time for Shakespeare's Sister. They kind of burnt, you know, bright but quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, great song. And the guy in it, Dave Evans, was actually the former boyfriend of Faye's Bananarama bandmate, Karen Woodward.
I read that. They must have been still all good friends, like very amicable breakup.
I don't know.
Unless
it was like, I've left Bananarama, I've left Karen, let's get revenge and do this together.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Actually, I wonder how Karen felt about that.
I don't know.
Because I don't know if they had a lot to do with each other after Siobhan left.
I think there was a very bitter period for a while there. And everything's okay now because they've toured again, Bananarama is the three of them. But I think it was a little, you know, dark for a while.
Yeah.
I think it was probably more of like, I want you in this, so I'm going to use you. But, yeah, I love that Siobhan talking about herself in this. So she describes her look as unhinged Victorian heroine meets Susie Quattro meets LaBelle.
Who's LaBelle?
As Patti LaBelle's group.
Oh, right. Yep. Yes.
And she's an angel of death in dark makeup coming down the stairs from another dimension.
Yep. I see that.
And it works so well. It's what I really love about the song as well because it just changes in a way that a beautiful balance shouldn't change.
Yes. Yes.
Because it is a beautiful song. Marcella Detroit has this amazing voice.
Mm.
And then there's, you better hope and pray. And I just, like, it's a risk because it could have ruined the song, but it just made it even better. And my favourite part of the song is Siobhan's part.
There you go.
I actually haven't seen, there's a takeoff apparently by French and Saunders. I feel like I need to watch that.
Yes, that would be funny, actually.
I think they've actually taken off a few of the clips that we've got today. It's a classic of the. And in some rare versions, the beginning quote's a variation of the opening of Macbeth.
Ah, yes.
The original quote of the play, "When shall we three meet again," is changed to "When shall we two meet again," referring to the story told in the video.
Classic.
Well, you know, they love a bit of Shakespeare, clearly from their name.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Oh, of course, I didn't even make that connection. Shakespeare's just like, yeah. I just thought, it was, oh, the Emma, wake
there,
up.
There we go.
Here we are.
Shakespeare's sister, yeah.
Yeah, it works, it works.
Yeah. All right, well, now should we get into it? Our audience voted, and it had so many different songs voted for.
Yeah.
Clearly in the 90s there was lots of things that people loved. So, but this is the top 10.
Uh-huh.
So let's start off with there's only one artist who makes two appearances in the charts.
Of course there is.
And it is Madonna. She's in at number 10 with Frozen. The song reached 5 in Australia, 2 in the US, and 1 in Costa Rica, Greece, Honduras, Hungary, Italy, Scotland, Spain, and the UK.
Nice. Did you say 2 in the US,
yes,
wasn't it? That made her, at the time at least, the artist with the most number 2 hits in the history of the US Hot 100.
Oh, which is it's a great stat to have, but still must be infuriating at the same time.
Yeah, frustrating to not get it to number 1. Anyway.
Great song.
Yeah.
What?
I've said before, I think Frozen, this period, Ray of Light in general was not, because this is from Ray of Light,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Lead single.
Good. It wasn't my favourite Madonna moment in time.
I love the slower stuff on Ray of Light. So I love Frozen, you know, Power of Goodbye. Nothing Really Matters is great as well.
Okay.
I
do.
I love it.
Frozen, yeah, it's okay.
This would be in my top 10 Madonna singles.
Okay,
Frozen.
Okay,
probably the bottom end of it, but still, it's
the video is beautiful.
Beautiful,
yes.
And I'm so glad that it was one of the two Madonna videos that got through, because it is stunning, and the special effects work in it. And again, it is so it is simple, but it is stylish as hell.
Yes. Yes, and it did win an MTV award for special effects.
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Yeah.
You know, the whole where she drops and turns into the birds.
Crows or whatever.
Yeah, that's just
and
amazing.
And also into the dog.
Into the dog, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really stunning.
Well, she was a shape-shifting witch, wasn't
yes.
she? Is that her character in this?
Yeah. But it was, I didn't actually realise this. Apparently it was inspired by the film The English Patient.
Really?
Yes. And also the work of the very talented Martha Graham, the choreographer. But yes, it was shot in the Mojave Desert in California.
And apparently she had an awful time.
Yes.
Poor Madonna. Yeah, she decided she didn't want to shoot in Iceland.
Yes, originally they were going to do it in Iceland.
But she thought, no, that'll be too cold and I'll be complaining all the time. And
yeah.
It sucks, so we'll do it in the desert instead. What happens? It got cold.
Yeah. Yeah, because the desert gets very cold. Yeah.
Oh, the poor thing.
Suffers for the arts. Yeah.
She did. It looked great, though.
Yeah, and because it was shot from January 7 to 11, so that's quite a few days of shooting as well.
Yeah.
Where she's out there and, you know, bare feet.
Yeah. Well, she was like, it was 20 degrees below zero. That's what she said. I don't know if that's exaggerating things, but wow.
Yeah, and then it started pouring rain and everyone got sick.
Oh, dear. The things you do for art.
Billboard considers it Madonna's third best video, noting it conveys the song's bleak heartbreak perfectly.
Mm. It does. I mean, it is. It's beautiful. I like how she sort of is up in the sky too. She sort of levitates a little bit, if I'm right.
And yes.
The henna, of course, I did like that about this stage of Madonna.
Yeah.
All the henna tattoos all over the hands. That was kind of cool.
And the dress was stunning and designed by Jean-Paul Gaultier, who has done
Ooh.
Some of Madonna's most iconic looks.
Nice.
Think conical bras.
Yes.
So, yeah, just everything was sort of came together and just was this amazing music video. And that's what she was known for just like you and new Madonna video was coming out and there was that anticipation on what the video was going to be like. And because each of them were different.
I was about to say that because they are all so different. Like which way is she going to go now?
Yeah. We often hear nowadays about eras and how they're talking about, you know, oh, this is her so-and-so era. Well, really, at the end of the day, Madonna invented that. Like she was the first one because for each new album, she would change her image so completely. Wouldn't even be a whole album sometimes. Sometimes she'd go, I mean, look at Like a Prayer. She went from that dark hair to the platinum blonde in one music video.
That's so true.
So she really would define each era of her music.
Yep. Talented lady who, we might talk about a bit later as
well. Yeah, well, we've said we were. See if you can guess which other Madonna song makes the list. All right, let's move on to number 9. And it is Kate Bush, Moments of Pleasure. The song reached 26 in the UK and 119 in Australia.
119, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd not heard this song before because I'm not, you know, big into Kate Bush catalogue, but the video is pretty hypnotising.
Yeah. Again, it's another one in our stylish videos that we're doing.
Which I feel like pretty much every video Kate Bush that I've seen is quite stylish.
Yes.
She's always sort of done that.
And she thinks not just of the music, but she thinks of the you know, the image that goes behind it. And she really rolls out the whole thing. And because this comes from a bigger project, so not just the album, but the video. The video is actually part of a short film called The Line, The Cross, The Curve, which was essentially an extended music video of several songs from the Red Shoes, hence the spoken word part at the beginning of the video taken from the film. So given the story of the Red Shoes, every video features Kate dancing in different forms, driven by the cursed shoes. In Moments of Pleasure, it's like she's a spinning ballerina in a music box or snow globe, and the snow comes in towards the end.
Because the Red Shoes is the movie that...
Well, the Red Shoes is the album title. Oh, but right. Yes, so the movie is about those Red Shoes and the cursed shoes and what they make her do.
Right. Yes, I can't keep up with Kate's.
Well, and you know, and everything is, and every project album has this theme running through it. And so this theme is about these cursed shoes.
Mm. I like that, she's explained the premise of it in different interviews. And in one, she sort of said, I feel my dearest memories have been spent with people I love. Those things that still make me laugh, the people that have touched me. This song is saying thanks to those friends of mine who were fun to be with, some of whom aren't alive anymore, though they're still with me in my memories. So I find that premise really nice to think about those moments of pleasure that they've given you in the past. And aside from being it's not a sad song, it's actually a happy song.
Yeah, melancholy song.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So in the song, she remembers friends and family who've died, including guitarist Alan Murphy, film director Michael Powell, dancer Gary Hurst, lighting engineer Bill Duffield and others. Composer and musician Michael Kamen arranged and conducted the orchestra, expanding on Bush's original piano accompaniment. So, it's quite stunning. And she wrote the chorus, to those we love, to those who will survive, for her mother, who was sick at the time of the recording, and she died just a short time later.
Yeah, a lot of people, because this came out like a year after her mother had died, thought that this was written in response to her mum dying. But it was, actually.
It was pre,
pre that. And it's cute that, speaking of her mother, there's a line that she says in there, every old sock meets an old shoe. And apparently that was a line that her mother always used to say to her.
Yeah.
In whatever context. And so when she played it for her mum, apparently she couldn't stop laughing. She thought it was so funny that she'd put it into the song. And so, you know, again, she doesn't see it as a sad song. She hears that and remembers that fun she had with her mum before she'd passed.
Yeah, which is lovely. And Mark Arman, the lead singer of Soft Cell, actually calls this his favourite song of all time. He even credits it with getting him sober.
Wow. Well done, Kate Bush.
Yeah. There's another achievement for a shelf. Yeah.
Tick. Awesome.
Yeah, really, really stunning music videos. So, and, you know, we've got some big Kate Bush fans who listen to us and vote regularly. So I'm happy that they got their girl through.
That's good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Speaking of legendary female artists, at number 8, it's our own Kylie Minogue and Did It Again. The song reached 15 in Australia, 14 in the UK, and 9 in Scotland.
Good song.
Good song. It was in an interesting period for Kylie.
Yes.
We've talked about this in the last episode, actually, because this is just before, or sorry, just after Where the Wild Roses Grow.
Yeah. Changing.
Yeah. Indie Kylie, which is a label she hates. Yeah.
It was, funny that there's 4 Kylies in the film clip, but it works so well for the song.
Yeah.
Indie Kylie, who is it? Sexy Kylie, cute Kylie.
No, pop Kylie and dance Kylie.
Oh, pop. Hang on.
I'm reading something else.
Yeah. I thought it was cute Kylie, dance Kylie, sex Kylie, indie Kylie.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm reading because a magazine had, I think the idea came because a magazine was talking about those different Kylies, and that's where they use that.
Nice.
Yes, because they were having a laugh at a lot of different articles that were appearing at the time in different magazines, and they were talking about pop Kylie, dance Kylie, sex Kylie, and with every different release of a single, they'd say, "What Kylie is it now?" And it was just becoming a joke. So, yeah, that's where they decided to come up with the idea of playing with it and did it so well.
Because, like, you've got to be one thing. We're all multifaceted people. Like, you don't have to just be indie.
Yep.
You don't have to just be sexy and stay in that box. Ugh.
And
no.
Yeah, longtime collaborator and friend William Baker designed the clothing for each character. So each character represented a different appearance and persona. Baker labelled Sex Kylie as a drag queen with a bitchy attitude and slutty appearance. Dance Kylie had, according to Baker, an irritating frothiness, while Cute Kylie had a violet-coloured hot pants and bra. The original costume was blue but quickly changed due to blue screen issues. And the outfit for Indie Kylie was red three-quarter pants with a high-collar shirt, which was inspired by Star Trek films.
Oh, Star Trek.
There you go.
Interesting.
Let's get Kylie on Star Trek. And also it was inspired a little by The Usual Suspects, which was very big at the time.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Yes. The director, Pedro Romani?
I think it is Romani.
Romani, yeah. He has directed quite a few things.
Yeah.
I looked him up and he's directed some of my favourite as well. He directed Common People and Disco 2000 by Pulp.
Oh, there we go.
He also
shout out to Anne.
Directed, and we talked about this a couple of episodes ago as well, History Repeating by Propellerheads, which was another great video. Also Crash by Propellerheads. Do you remember that song?
No.
I went and listened. Oh, da, 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 da. It's like an instrumental. Oh, it's a good film
clip
too.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been into that.
Oh, it's so good. Anyway.
I like vocals.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. But, yeah, he directed that. Blur's Park Life. Like, yeah, he's done quite a bit of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know whether Kylie had a good time making this clip, though.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah. I just think it went on a bit long for her and, you know, because they had to shoot everything so many times.
Yeah.
So she said that it took longer than expected. Yeah, because the director apparently wanted everything to be precise. So I think he just kept it going and she was like, all right, come on.
Well, you kind of need
this before.
It to be precise. When you're fighting with yourself, you need the hand to be able to grab that, you know, to look believable. So you got to get the right angles and stuff. Yeah. It would be difficult to do.
Now, although Minogue said that Indie Kylie was the winner of the fight, she thought that Cute Kylie represented herself more than any of the other three characters.
Oh, she sees herself as Cute Kylie.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, because I don't think at the end of the day Indie Kylie was, even though Indie Kylie was winning, I don't think that was really her at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But it won an award as well. It won the Aussie Video Entry at the 1998 MTV Music Awards.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And costumes from the video, along with accessories spanning Minogue's career, became part of an exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery in Australia in 2005. They're also displayed in another exhibition in 2007. So, yeah, good old Kyles. And so many different Kylie songs could have made it through for the 90s. Confide in Me did get a lot of votes as well.
Did it,
just
yeah.
missed out. It would have been like the top 15, but Did It Again was the one that got through.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this gentleman had lots of entries in the 80s, only one entry in the 90s, Michael Jackson, Black or White. Do you agree with me when I saw you kicking dirt in my eye? The song went to number one in many countries, including Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and the US.
Yeah, big song.
Yeah. And, you know, they threw a lot of money at this one.
Heaps of money. And this was the one to consolidate him as the king of pop. Like, they were really pushing for that.
Yeah. And again, I feel like, interestingly enough, this was more style over substance as well. Just in that 90s trend.
Because
I think if you look at quite a few of the other of his music videos were very story based, whereas this one was a lot of ideas done very stylishly.
Yeah.
And that's not me throwing shade. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's saying that, like, if you look at Thriller, it's got this big storyline.
Storyline, yeah.
Yeah.
This was less of that. And, you know, it was just a plea for racial tolerance, basically. And so him going through different continents of the globe, you know, dancing with over here with this person and dancing.
Visiting
over
the
here.
Kitchen sink while he's there.
I thought it
was a bit. It was a bit of a flex. It was a bit of a flex. It's like, look who I am. Look who I can get in my music video.
True, true. He had, of course, Macaulay Culkin when he was at the height still of the Home Alone stuff in it. As
George
well as,
Bent as well.
That's right. The Cheers guy was the father. And even a
Tyra Banks.
Tyra Banks, sorry. Not Tara. What am I talking about?
But yeah, pre-fame Tyra Banks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. She hadn't yet told anybody she was disappointed in them or that she was rooting for them. I was rooting for you! Best moment ever. God, she was horrible. I used to love that show, but God, she was horrible in that show.
Oh, was she?
She was really, they put them through some horrible things.
They did.
And then if they ever said no, she would just go off or nut at them.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't want me to shave your head?
You no one says no to Tyra Banks.
But anyway.
Oh, dear.
It's not without its controversy, this clip, though.
Yes, true, that.
So even that beginning part, a lot of people thought that he had ripped off Twisted Sister. We're not going to take it for the beginning part of the music video.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's actually the beginning and the ends that had some controversy.
Because
the ends, he ended up like getting rid of it for many years.
Yeah, well, he did change it, I think, a little bit. I watched both, like the usual one that we saw on Day to Day. That was the shortened one and it finished after the morphing heads.
Yes.
But the
which probably was all that was needed anyway, because it's a big way to finish. Because he was one of the first people to use that technology.
Yeah, and it was good. It was fun,
and it was done really well.
Yeah, but then of course, he went on to do another 4 minutes of
flexing.
Well, because he turns into a panther, right? And then the panther leaves the studio, and panther becomes
a black
Michael
cat
Jackson.
Per se.
And then ripped up the city a little bit.
Yeah. So, and just started like beating on things for no reason.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And then, a lot of people were just saying that he was, showing violence for no reason. So they got rid of it. And then years later, they put it back in and put racist words on.
To give it a reason.
For him to be breaking things.
Yeah. Because originally his concept, I think, was that would be like what a panther does. Panthers tear at things. And so he was just trying to embody a panther type thing, which didn't make sense to people. So it made more sense, yes, him ripping down, you know, signs that are horrible and whatever else.
Yeah, because Entertainment Weekly ran an article called Michael Jackson's Video Nightmare.
Of course they did. Don't think it was quite that bad.
Yeah, so it was reissued in 2001.
Uh-huh.
Where, yes, he was basically, you know, getting back at the KKK there. But the video premiered simultaneously in 27 countries with an audience of 500 million viewers, the most ever for a music video. It premiered on MTV, BET, VH1 and Fox, giving them their highest Nielsen ratings ever at the time, as well as BBC's Top of the Pops in the UK on November 14, 1991. That is both my sister-in-law and my cousin's birthday.
Oh, happy day.
Yeah. It's but, just happened, so happy birthday, Jenny and Michael.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, 500 million people. Couple. Can you imagine?
That's a couple, yeah.
That's a large percentage of the globe.
Yeah.
Really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was big, and I remember it being, you know, big at the time that that it was going to be coming out and being this big thing.
Yeah.
And directed by Michael by John Landis as well, who did Thriller.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently there was a rumor, and I always thought this was true, that Slash was the guy that played the guitar at the start. You know how there's the guitar stuff. Slash has come out saying, "No, man, that was never me. Anyone that knows the way I play knows it's not me." And who knows how that rumor got started?
Yeah,
weird,
and,
huh?
And wrong Jackson, because he had just done Black Hat around that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it was related to that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely not Slash, for those of you who thought it was, because I always thought it was, because that rumour was rife.
Yeah.
But, not Slash.
There we go.
Mm.
All right. So that was Michael Jackson at 7. Let's move on to number 6, and it's Jamiroquai and Virtual Insanity. The song reached 75 in Australia, 3 in the UK and 1 in Iceland.
75 in Australia. Get out.
I'm actually surprised because I think for me, I bought the CD single, so I helped get it to 75. Thank you. but yeah, I'm shocked that it didn't do better.
Yeah.
And maybe it was just because it was at the kind of beginning for Jamiroquai. I feel like Jamiroquai got bigger in Australia.
In the early 2000s.
As it went on.
Yeah.
So maybe this was just a bit too early.
Yeah. Jamiroquai. I've been wanting to talk about Jamiroquai.
You literally have.
I really love Jamiroquai. I love his style. Well, I should say the band.
Yeah.
Sorry. I always think of it as a him, as JK. Yeah. But it's not, of course. There's a whole band. But yes,
and JK is the name. Sounds like he's always joking.
Huh?
Because JK means jokes. Yeah.
Does it?
Like in abbreviation, if somebody writes JK to you, they talk.
Oh,
Yes.
I'm not down with the.
All right, that's there we go. I'm cooler.
You are always cooler than me. But yes, I love JK's style, the hats and the just the yeah.
And has made so many great music videos over the years as well. If you think about some, like what's the one in the car?
Was that Cosmic? No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe it was. Maybe it was Cosmic Girl. Yeah. And Canned Heat, that's great as well. I think Heat's my favourite Jamiroquai song and not just because of Centre Stage.
Mm.
Maybe it's because of Centre Stage. Great film. Great film.
That's the dance film.
Yeah, right? And Mandy Moore's Only More.
I
Want to Be With You. Great song.
Anyhow, we digress. This is a great video.
So good. Good.
I watched it again this morning. Just the way it moves. I mean, that's what it's known for. Everything moves. It looks like the floor is moving and the couches are moving on the floor. But apparently that wasn't the floor at all. It was the walls they used
to
give it that illusion. But I was looking at, I don't know how that works.
Well, I mean, and that's the beauty of filmmaking as well, is that they can make anything look like anything.
Because those walls look still as.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, what do you mean the walls are moving? How can the walls be moving? But yeah, technology, huh?
Yeah. And again, another, I think we're going to be talking about awards for so many of these things. It earned 10 nominations at the 1997 MTV Video Music Awards.
Wow.
And won 4 awards, including Breakthrough Video and Best Video of the Year.
Yes. Also Best Special Effects and Best Cinematography.
Yeah. And in 2006, it was voted 9th by MTV viewers in a poll on music videos that broke the rules.
Yeah, it does. It defies rules of how does the couch move like that? And yeah, it's awesome. The whole song, though, as well, like I've never really – I just like the beat and the vibe and the, never really listened too much to what it has to say. But Virtual Insanity is actually like warning against the threat of – they say insidious technology and its increasing control over humanity. Okay, so he wrote this with his keyboardist back then, and that was in the very early days of, you know,
internet. Terminator had gone there first, though.
Very early days of internet. You look at where we are now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of true. Like, well, I mean, you
more than me.
What do you mean, me more than
you? You've got a woman in your house who answers your responses.
Yes, yes. I do tell her to turn the lights off and play the music.
Yeah.
And I've got my robot vacuum cleaner.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, wow. But yes.
So if they're coming for anyone, they're coming for you before me. Your robot vacuum suddenly got you on the floor.
Please, no.
Can't get up the stairs though, can it? Yeah.
But, yeah, seriously, he was a bit of a forward thinker is all I'm saying, to write a song like that and, you know,
yeah.
I think technology definitely has taken over our lives, this stuff.
Yes, and, you know, and I could go into this whole American politics how they're talking about one of the new congressmen is part cyborg, but I won't get into that. I'm loving American politics right now. Because they're crazier than we are.
I have not been following it, but I'm now interested in this part cyborg.
John Fetterman, who apparently is half cyborg, beat Dr. Oz.
Oh, my God. I heard that Dr. Oz was running. Wasn't Dr. Oz on Team Trump or something? Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah. And John Dr. Fetterman, Oz, who they were trying – who the poor man had a stroke, right, and sometimes needs a computer to register words for him.
Okay.
And so – Fox News was saying he's now a cyborg and the computers are thinking for him.
Heavens. That's horrible.
Yep. And he still won. He still beat Dr. Oz. Because Oprah, here we go, we're getting into politics. Because Oprah came out and was like, I'm voting for John. If I could, I'd vote for John Fetterman. So there you go.
And she used to be all about Dr.
Yeah,
Oz.
Yeah, she was the one who discovered him. So anyway.
Go America.
American politics.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, all right, because I will then start talking about American politics. Let's move on to a song we have talked about, but this music video is iconic. It is Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You.
Nothing compares. Nothing compares to you. Nothing compares. Nothing compares.
Reached 1 in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and the US, and many other places.
Yeah. We love this. Well, I love this song. Yeah. And it's a beautiful film clip. We talked about this clip when we last talked about the song. It's just gorgeous.
Absolutely stunning. And not originally what they were planning.
No.
Because originally the where she was walking through the cemetery, all of that stuff was meant to be the main part of the clip.
Mm.
And the singing was just the B-roll, like the stuff to boost it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, because she got so emotional, she actually thought she had done something wrong. Like she thought that it was terrible.
Oh, really?
And that they weren't going to use it and that she had mucked up this music video. And then they made the whole clip pretty much about just her singing and showing that emotion.
Because it's perfect.
Yeah.
Like she does convey all that emotion in her face and just – and what a face.
Yeah. But how groundbreaking as well that a music video that is essentially just a shot of someone's face
– yeah.
It was so amazing. Nobody had done that before.
Yeah.
Nobody had
black and white as well, wasn't it? Yeah. Was it black and white?
No. The no.
No, it wasn't. Yep. You're right. Sorry.
It looks it, though, because the colours are so simple and she's wearing a black turtleneck.
Yes.
But, yeah, the whole thing is was very daring to release that music video and it just people loved it. I mean, it won 3 awards at the 1990 MTV Awards, Video of the Year. She was the first female to be awarded that, which don't get me started on that.
Wow.
Best female video and best postmodern video. And it was nominated for best breakthrough video, viewer's choice, and international viewer's choice.
Well deserved.
Yeah.
Well deserved.
Now, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but were you a fan of Fast Forward back in the day?
I was never allowed to watch Fast Forward. I was too young and my mum was very strict on who could watch M15 Plus.
Whereas my mum, if she hears Nothing Compares to You, will still bring up the Fast Forward skit where Gina Riley, who went on to do Kath and Kim, where she was Sinead O'Connor and sang the line, there's nothing there, I've got no hair, you fool.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, very funny takeoff. I remember it stuck in my head for ages. I've got no hair, you fool. Great comedy skit. It probably is online somewhere.
I should look it up.
Yeah. And it's Gina Riley. Come on. I love Gina Riley.
She's very good.
Look at me.
Aussie comedian. But, apparently we talked about the emotion that she conveys in this song. The tears that happen, there's a couple of tears that roll down her face toward the end of the video. And she said that these tears were real, obviously, but she didn't intend to cry but thought, no, I'll let it happen.
Yeah.
So she, deliberately let go. And apparently they were triggered by thoughts of her mum who died in a car accident in 1985.
And her mother who she had a very
tumultuous
relationship with. She loved her mum, didn't always like her. No. You know, her mum abused her physically, emotionally. Yeah, so very, very strained relationship. So, this is an interesting one. She wrote that she was sitting on the toilet when she was informed that Nothing Compares to You and I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got, her album, both hit number one in America. She said, whoever it was who told me got cross because I didn't take the news happily. Instead, I cried like a child at the gates of hell while sitting on the toilet. I don't know.
Sinead. She's fascinating. Cried like a child at the gates of hell. Wow.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Great, great clip. I'd be surprised if anyone isn't moved by that clip.
Yeah.
And that song. Prince obviously wrote the song as well, which you mentioned.
And Wolf. And Prince and her did not get on well.
No.
Read her autobiography. It's fantastic. All right. Number 4. Another iconic clip. Daft Punk, Around the World. The song reached 11 in Australia, 61 in the US, 5 in the UK, and 1 in Iceland and Italy.
Only 61 in the US. Okay.
Yeah. Again, I think it's one of those bands that went on to become bigger in the, like for in the US. Because if you think about where Daft Punk ended up.
Yeah, yeah. They're a French duo, aren't they? Yeah. They're French. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a song. Like, this song was huge and great video clip too.
Yeah. Yeah, another iconic music video.
Yeah, that uses choreography, like, amazingly, I guess. What word is there? He deliberately did that. The director, Michael Gondry, said he was sick of seeing choreography being mistreated in videos like Filler with fast cutting and fast editing, really shallow. I don't think choreography should be shot in close-ups. And so he really made the most of it and,
well, and clearly it worked out for him because, it is still being remembered all these years later.
Yeah. It features, of course, lots of different characters on the platform.
Which is the final record as well.
Yeah, I read that, which I didn't get from it, but, I can see that now. 4 robots who are walking around in a circle, 4 tall athletes wearing the big prosthetic heads walking up and down stairs, 4 women that are dressed like synchronized swimmers moving up and down the stairs, and 4 skeletons and also 4 mummies that were dancing in time with the song's drum pattern, I think. Because, yeah, they all had a different job, didn't they?
Yeah, they were representing a different instrument.
Yeah.
So the robots were the singing voice, the physicality and the small-minded rapidity of the athletes, symbolising the ascending, descending bass guitar. The femininity of the synchronised swimmers represents the high-pitched keyboard. The skeletons dance to the guitar line and the mummies represent the drum machine.
Yeah, really clever. Really clever and mesmerising to watch. Like I watched it again this morning. You can't sort of stop watching it. Very simple but effective.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and they ended up making some great music videos as well, Daft Punk. And they, I mean, they have that whole great imagery as well. They wear the helmets. They don't show their faces.
Yeah, they've done that since early 2000s, I think. They've had those headgear things on, which apparently cost like $65,000 for one of those helmets.
Well, clearly around the world did pretty well for them. And One More Time, which clearly. Is great. Great song, One More Time. One More Time is probably my favourite song of theirs.
Oh, okay.
One More Time. Oh, and their song with Pharrell's great as well, Get Lucky. Gotta love that.
Yeah, that's a good song.
And their work of the weekend was great too.
Yeah. They've done some good stuff.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a family affair, this video, apparently. The Gondries all got in on it. The costumes for the video were designed by Florence Fontaine, who is the mother of Gondry's son. So you would assume his ex-partner, perhaps.
Yep. What a great name, by the way.
Florence Fontaine, I know. The flashing lights were operated by his brother, Oliver Twist Gondry. So, yeah, they all got together and... It reminded me of when I read that, I thought, oh, yeah, because you've done a few music videos in your time and you call on the people that you know can do the job and do it well. Oh, can you come in and do this? And when you put the people together, look what magic happens.
Yes. In Kylie Gale's music video for Upside Down, you and I played a fighting, feuding couple. And then and then I left and then you had some wine with your friends.
Oh, and I tore up your
photo.
Photos. I've still got the other half.
Cool. Great.
No, I've got the photos that I hadn't torn up.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, I thought you were going to say you kept just a part of you. And,
oh, yeah, no, I've got photos of me all over my room. Yeah. Please. Oh, dear.
All right, now let's move on to our number three, and it is George Michael and Freedom 90. Yeah. The song reached 18 in Australia, 28 in the UK, 8 in the US and 1 in Canada and Zimbabwe.
I love this song.
Yeah, and I think the reason why it didn't chart as well and maybe in Australia and the UK is because it was a later single.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just bought the album Listen Without Prejudice.
Yeah. It would have been a popular album.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't buy this single, love the song, because I had the album.
Yeah, totally. And what a way to... Tell him how you feel, George Michael.
Yeah, literally blowing up his past at the end.
Yes. Well, and throughout.
Yeah.
Every time it sort of says freedom, there's either a jukebox blowing up or a guitar blowing up, which were the seminal pieces of course, going back to his image of the Faith days with the jukebox and the guitar and the leather jacket that he wanted to break free from.
Yeah.
Freedom, baby.
Yeah, and also from the whole Wham image. And it was all about the breaking free from the image.
Yes.
You know, still proud of the music and what he'd done.
Sure.
But just that image and being the sex symbol and being the, you know, the pop idol.
Yes.
He wasn't interested in that anymore.
And that's another thing that was so cleverly done with this video, because people were surprised. They're like, where's George Michael in it? He's not in it. What's going on? It's like that was a deliberate thing because he does want it to be about the music, but putting models, the beautiful people, in his place as a comment on what the music industry requires. You have to be a certain look and beautiful, you know, to succeed in this industry.
So I don't, you know, it's interesting. I don't know whether he made his point about that he didn't need to be in it, just was about the music, because it didn't just become about the music, it became about the music video.
Well, yeah, it did become about the music. It was an iconic music video because of those iconic supermodels.
Yeah, and then he did it again, you know, for Too Funky.
Yes.
You know, to a lesser extent, but still another great, you know, iconic music video.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, really, really interesting stuff. And it was so interesting that that some of them didn't want to be in it to start off with, and they had to be persuaded. Like Linda Evangelista took some persuading before agreeing to appear, saying he thought it would make us a big deal, that it would be good for us. I was like, please, we're here. We've already arrived. But after speaking with Michael, she was convinced and rearranged her schedule. And in a 2015 Vanity Fair article, she reflected on her decision positively, saying, little did I know that to this day, when someone meets me for the first time, they bring up that video. That's what they remember. So, yeah, George was right. Because I do think Linda Evangelista was on a little bit of a ego trip around that time. Because she was the one that said, you know, she needs $10,000 to get out of bed.
Yeah.
She was playing a role, I know. Yeah. But, yes. But
she was in high demand, baby. Like, she could, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think that she's had the lasting career that somebody, you know, like a Naomi or a Cindy has had. There we go. I'm going to say that.
Ooh, really?
I don't know if I like her. There you go. I've said that now too.
Linda Evangelista, she's fairly stunning.
Whereas Cindy Crawford, love her. Naomi, crazy as hell, love her. She can throw a phone at me anytime. Naomi, if you're listening, I'm available for phone throwing.
Even Cindy was a little bit bummed about her filming, saying everyone shot scenes separately, so, you know, it wasn't like a big party atmosphere or anything. We each had our own personalities within the video, but I remember being bummed, like, really? I have to be in the bathtub with a towel on my head? Everyone else gets to look so cool. But then when I saw it after, I was like, okay, this is pretty cool.
She does. She yeah. looks great.
She looks amazing, and she works that bathtub well.
Yeah. She does. So the music video was actually inspired by Peter Lindbergh's now iconic portrait of Naomi Campbell, Linda Evangelista, Tatiana Patitz, Christy Turlington and Cindy Crawford for the 1990 January cover of the British edition of Vogue. So that's why he asked the five models to appear in the music video. He was really inspired by that.
Oh, that cover. Yes, I remember that cover.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, got them in and then added the men as well and just, you know, made this great music video. And I think it was really great that their representation came together and decided that they would all be compensated equally. So they all got $15,000 a day.
Okay.
So Linda Evangelista got a $15,000 for getting out of bed.
So it was worth getting out of bed for.
And it was directed by David Fincher, who has done some amazing stuff over the years. He's done clips for Madonna, Billy Idol, Aerosmith, Paula Abdul, and, of course, he's a film director as well. So beautiful stuff.
Yes. Yes. Love it.
And yet 92 sketch storyboard.
Is that a lot?
Yeah.
I don't know because I'm not in that production side of things, storyboarding and stuff. I guess it is a lot, 92 different.
For a small music video.
4 minute music video, that's a lot.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now let's move on to number two, and it is The Verve and Bittersweet Symphony. No change, I can change, I can change, I can change. The song reached 11 in Australia, 12 in the US, 2 in the UK and 1 in Scotland.
Oh, okay. Only 2 in the UK and 1 in Scotland. I mean, yeah. And 11 here, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this would have been number one a whole lot more places. I love this song.
I think it was a grower. I feel like it's one of those songs that, as the years went on, has become more and
bigger
more.
And bigger.
Yeah. It's one that's never fallen out of favour.
Yeah.
From people.
Yeah.
Like it's often thought of as a big song from the 90s, but I feel like in the 90s here in Australia it wasn't paid as much attention, but people love it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, and perhaps that's largely to do, again, with advertising. We've discussed this before because this got used, I think, in a massive Nike campaign. That was overseas, mind you, but that gave it a whole life. And here, I remember, it's been used in advertising campaigns here. I can't remember exactly which ones, but lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. great for that.
Now, a lot of people did liken it to a song that actually got quite a few votes. I think it was at like 11 or 12.
Mm.
Massive Attack's Unfinished Sympathy, which sees Shara Nelson walking down a street in LA. It is a great music video.
Yeah. Well, that's what inspired this. They have said openly that has inspired this music video as well.
I know this song and music video were inspired by a lot. So, again, we've often talked about MTV Music Video Awards, and it was nominated for a number of awards, including three at that MTV Awards, because, you know, all of these songs are iconic.
Yeah, it was nominated for Video of the Year, Best Group Video, and Best Alternative Video, I think. Didn't win any. That's a shame.
I can't remember what won that year. So I'm just, in case it was like Madonna, Ray of Light, I don't want to criticize anything.
Fair enough.
I think the really interesting thing about this song, though, is not the music video.
Yeah, it's more the...
It is the controversy that surrounds the song.
The song itself.
You know, because it's... you know, it took inspiration from the Rolling Stones,
mm-hmm.
And they sought permission.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, they thought they had done it the right way.
They negotiated the rights to use the Last Time sample.
Yeah.
Just that chord progression, because I listened to the Last Time, you can hear it.
Yeah.
It's similar. Not the same, but similar. Yes,
yep. But when it came out, it did not go to plan.
Yeah. That was all thanks to... Alan Klein, who was...
Alan Klein.
Sorry, Alan Klein.
Don't apologise to him.
He was the Stones' former manager. Okay, so apparently, although the Verve had negotiated rights with the copyright holder, Decca Records, they didn't obtain permission from former manager Alan Klein because he owned the copyrights to their pre-1970s songs, including The Last Time. So they went to the wrong people. And to be honest, the record people should have probably said...
They really should have.
You don't need to talk to us. You need to talk to this guy.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And so basically, I think all of the money...
100% of the royalties
was taken away
at first.
That's crazy.
And it was estimated to have generated almost $5 million in publishing by 2019. So in 2018, Ashcroft expressed his anger over the situation, saying, "Someone stole God knows how many millions of dollars off me in 1907 and they've still got it. Anyone, unless you are mentally ill, will always remember the day when $50 million was stolen off them." He said he intended to pursue the matter with Klein's son, Jody, who had become the head of ABK Co. following Klein's death in 2009. So in early 2019, Ashcroft's managers approached Jody Klein. He connected them to the Rolling Stones manager, Joyce Smith, who agreed to speak to Jagger and Richards. And in April 2019... ABCO, Jagger and Richards agreed to return the Bittersweet Symphony royalties and songwriting credits to Ashcroft.
Yeah. So basically, long story short, that sounded like a lot. It was like Keith Richards and Mick Jagger never pushed for songwriting credits on this. They said it wasn't their fight. They said they quite liked this song, but they were staying out of it. It was this Alan Klein guy.
I still think they should have jumped in.
What do you mean?
And gone, hey, 100%.
Oh, yeah, as in why do we get, yeah.
Like, really, don't just go, what? Oh, no, I'm going to benefit from this. I'm just going to put my hands up and say no. Like, they came good in the end, but
yeah,
come on, guys.
Yeah, because
they should have got involved.
Maybe. They should have fought harder with Alan.
You know, like, and we've talked about where people have just stolen a sample. Like, we talked about a few weeks ago, Arrested Development didn't know about sampling and took a bit of Prince's. Prince didn't then go and demand all of the money from it.
He waited and said, okay, now I want that percentage.
Now I want that.
Give me that percentage.
Yeah, but, you know, 100% of the royalties after they had asked permission is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. I don't understand how that ever happened.
Like, yeah, like what court or whatever, that's just crazy. Like,
it is because, crazy talk.
Yes, they used the back of that song, but, you know, those lyrics.
It's different. It doesn't sound the same at all. Like, yes, that chord progression, you can hear that. But that's it. That's where it ends. Like, totally two different songs.
Yeah. If somebody stole something, I'm going to come on the original artist side. But, you know, they thought they were doing the right thing. Exactly. And even when it was discovered they didn't do the right thing, 100% ridiculous.
No, too much. I'm glad it came good in the end.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, me too. And just quickly, my favourite song of The Verve, The Drugs Don't Work. Great song.
Oh, you love that song too. Yeah. I love that song.
I bought this, that CD single. I love that song.
Yes. That's a, they just that's make a you favourite worse. Of mine. Oh, heartbreaking.
All anyway, right. Anyway, it's now time. It's time.
Drum roll.
The number one song or music video of the 90s, as voted by our very, very savvy and intelligent listeners, Madonna. Vogue. The song reached one pretty much most places, including Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK and the US.
I love this song. I love the video. There was no surprise to see this came in number one.
Yeah, I was hoping, but I was really relieved to see that it really won quite easily.
Yeah, yeah.
Great music video.
It's beautiful.
And again, so stylish. It is all about style and that's what, you know, the song's about.
Yeah. I remember being young and just watching this and pretending like in my head that I was Madonna.
Yeah.
Singing along, you probably did too.
Well, I knew the choreography then and I still know it to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll often bust my arms out and do the choreography.
Featured a bunch of her dancers that went on the Blonde Ambition tour.
Yes. With her. Yeah, including her backing singers, Donna and Nikki.
That's right, they're there. Two of the House of Extravaganza.
House of Extravaganza.
People who were Louis and Jose.
Jose, yeah. Yes. Yeah, who were just amazing Voguers.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you look, they're the ones that do the really complicated voguing.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really, really great stuff. Because, you know, that world's the ball scene, which was celebrated in Ryan Murphy's Pose.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and this was the world's introduction to a lot of that style.
Yeah, the world hadn't sort of seen it. It was one of...
It was underground, yeah.
It was underground, and so one of... It was brought to Madonna's attention by one of her...
Debbie Mazza. They were in a club dancers, and Debbie Mazza saw the dancers first and said, hey, like, Madonna, you'd probably love this.
Yeah.
And she was right.
Absolutely.
Debbie Mazza, who has appeared in a lot of Madonna music videos, is a fantastic actor in her own right as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. Awesome.
So a lot of the inspiration from it came from classic Hollywood, and a lot of the poses and shots were actually recreations of noted portraits of people such as Marilyn Monroe, Betty Davis, Veronica Lake, Greta Garbo, Marlene Dietrich, Katharine Hepburn, Judy Garland and Jean Harlow.
Many of whom she mentions in the song.
Yeah, she name checks quite a few of them. But yes, it sort of took that old Hollywood. So it's, I really love that kind of thing. So she took the two sides of Vogue. She took the dance craze, the underground dance craze, but then she also took Vogue, meaning the fashion magazine.
Yeah.
And in Vogue and took
melded
that
them
stylish
together.
Hollywood thing and melded it together with the underground dance craze and just was so exciting.
Yeah.
Nobody else was doing anything like it at the time because, you know, she was the leader in that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So since then, you know, it did lose out to Nothing Compares to You at the MTV Video Awards.
Ah, wow, okay.
But it did win Best Direction, Best Editing and Best Cinematography.
Nice.
But since then, you know, it has really been seen as being the leader in music videos. And it was voted number two on MTV's 100 Greatest Music Videos Ever Made.
That was back in 99. I don't know if they've done it since then.
But still, I mean, you know.
No, just full disclosure, got to say. I don't know where that stands now. Probably still up there is my guess. Like it probably still ranks quite highly.
Yeah. But often in lists of you know, big music videos, it always makes the list. Mm. And, you know, it was directed by David Fincher, who we mentioned before, and it was the third time that they had collaborated on a video after Express Yourself and Oh Father. Okay. And the story actually goes that Oh Father is such a beautiful music video.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he was the one that wanted to make that clip. And they made it and the song was a bit of a flop.
Mm.
And then she said to him when she had this song, she was like, David, you made me make that music video, so now you owe me one. You have to direct Vogue.
Awesome.
And it clearly worked out for both of them.
Yes.
Because I'm sure he didn't mind anyway. Yeah. Oh,
of course not. He would have been paid for it as well.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, but, you know, has made three of her best music videos. Yeah. Express Yourself, Oh Father, and Vogue.
Yeah.
You know, and clearly shows what a talented and inspirational and amazing director he is.
Yeah. 100%.
And it was her fourth music video to get to 100 million views.
Wow.
Which was actually really fantastic because it was Bitch I'm Madonna, Hung Up and La Isla Bonita. And then when Vogue got in there, that meant she'd had one in each decade for four decades in a row that has reached 100 million views.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Good 80s, 90s, noughties and the 10s.
There you
go. Well done to my home girl.
Not without its controversy. Oh. Madonna's no one without controversy. No, I shouldn't say that. She's, you know what,
but controversy people, people just follows love, people her love to hate on her.
Yeah. What was it for this time? I think it was because her boobs. Breasts. Yes, her nipples could be seen through
through
that
a
nice
sheer shirt.
Black sheer, or was it the sheer blouse?
Yes,
the
white lace blouse. Yes. Yeah.
Come on, people. What's
and yeah, MTV wanted to remove the scene, but Madonna refused and the video aired with the shot intact.
Yep. Yeah.
I remember sometimes on Australian television, they would still play it, but they would either take that shot out, put something else in, or they would just go closer on that shot.
Oh,
so I do remember. Or I think there was like the nipples that get blurred out as well.
Oh, God.
Pixelate. They're nipples, people.
Everyone's got them.
Yep.
Everyone I know.
But yes. I mean, just again, silly little controversy, but yes. You know, great music video.
Indeed it was. I'm glad that one got to number one.
Yay.
Yay.
All right. Well, that brings a completion.
It does.
Yay. And some news for us. Next episode will be our last episode.
Yeah.
So if you would like to celebrate with us and tell us why you've loved the podcast, if you want to send an email to us, you can send it to wayne@tunks.com.au. And you can send a little recording and we'll pop it on the next episode.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. And make sure you go watch all these music videos.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.